Hey everybody, you've got Kimberly. Shanoa should hopefully be on here in a little bit. So Louis says, I'm looking at a property that has a unit A and B situation. The lot is not being replatted. Rather, condo type setup is being created. How is the deed or ownership of the land help in this situation? I don't know that one. So if it's not being replatted, so rather unit... So what I'm hearing is it's like a duplex right now, and they're going to split it, and it's going to be a condo instead. It might need to be replatted. So I'm going to use the collective brain here. So if anybody has an experience with this, go ahead and chime in here. But my assumption would be that the tax assessor's office is going to figure it out on how to split up that land and how to do that stuff. But I think it might need to be replatted to accomplish this. So Louis, feel free to post it on the Facebook group. I'm gonna leave that question here. So if Shanoa joins us, we can ask the person who knows the very most. So let's see. So Christine's got a question about the website. She says, explain who and what is included in writing the websites. So we're going to set up your websites, with Aria Matcher. So initially that's where you guys are going to be. And those are our older sites right now. So we put a bunch of default content in there. So it looks like a real website, talks like a real website kind of thing. We are moving to, two newer websites. So if you haven't seen them yet, let me bring up my page here. Give me just a second here. Loading. Anytime now. Don't you love when you're trying to do something live and in person? Things don't want to load. So these are the new websites. This is my seller site. So they're nice and fresh and mobile friendly and all that good stuff. So these are going to work with the Big Dark Tools app. So we're really excited about them. We also have the buyer sites ready to go. So this is the buyer site. What's nice is on the back end, you guys are going to be able to change pretty much everything. There's some of the, if you think like the structure of the website, the bones of it, you really can't change, but content wise, you can pretty much change the whole thing. So we're really excited about these. The investor site is not up yet. I'm waiting to find out. It should be pretty much any day here that the investor sites are going to be up. So we're going to be getting everybody moved over to these sites. So Christine, since you guys are just coming in, these business launchers, it looks like Shanoa's kind of up right now. The business launcher we're putting up with the old websites, and then we're going to be moving everybody over to the new websites. As part of our big transition, we're hoping by Christmas we're going to have them all the way up and have everybody ready to transition. So, Shanoa, are you here?
I am, yeah. Sorry about that. They're just working on some little internet issues here, but sorry about that. Thank you, Kimberly, for getting us started. I think, did you get to go over some of the Big Dog calendar? And it sounds like Big Dog Tech Next, Big Dog Technology.
Yeah, so I was just covering Christine's question, so I wasn't sure how long you were going to be, so I wanted to try to kind of cover some of these questions. So I tried to dive into Louis' question about this Unit A, Unit B thing. I don't really know the answer to it, so I was kind of hoping you'd come back for that. So I really just handled Louis' question, and we were just talking a little bit about the new sites. So I can stick around if you think you're going to still have internet issues?
No, I think I'm gonna have internet for a while.
Okay.
I think I have internet. So I'm on Christine Sotelo's question, right?
So I handled.
No, you answered that one.
I want to go back up to Louis' question, that unit A, unit B, and then everything else hasn't been.
Did you answer Christine Sotelo's?
Yes, about the website.
Will you answer Christine Sotelo's? Go ahead.
Yeah. So I already answered hers about. About the websites, and then she just had a follow-up question, who's going to contact us. So it'll be the Aria Matcher team. So just keep an eye on your spam folder. A lot of times their emails land in there. But once you submit your business launcher, you guys can always contact support@ariametro.com and ask them for updates and stuff like that. But it'll pretty much be contact by email. No, if you're there, I can't hear you. Shanoa, your audio's in and out really, really, really bad.
Hey guys, can you hear me at all?
Yeah, I can hear you now. You're better. No, I lost you again. No, we lost you again. All right, so Shanoa asked me to keep going with the questions. So Louie, I'm gonna have her circle back to your question when she gets back on. Let's see. Christine says, a homeowner asked me about her chances of getting a loan for a mobile home if we take her mortgage subject to. I know Alan gives a good explanation as to how this would not harm the homeowner and how they could get another loan, but I had a hard time explaining it. Can you go over and refresh this? So yeah, so they could get another loan when they have a property subject to. That being said, when you go to your mortgage company, they're going to run your credit. So let's say it was me coming in and asking for a new loan. So I already have a mortgage that I've sold off subject to. So it's still on my credit, but now I'm going in and trying to get a mortgage. So what will happen is they're going to say, so what's going on with this mortgage? Because it's still on your credit. And you're going to say, oh, I've allowed somebody to take it over subject to. So you're going to have, so in this case, I'm going to have a bunch of documentation saying that I'm not really responsible for the mortgage. Somebody else is paying it. So that will satisfy the bank to a major degree. Now, that being said, most of the time, they're not going to be particularly happy that you let your mortgage go subject to when you're trying to apply with a new bank. Because they're going to say, well, if you already did it once, what's going to cause you for not doing it again? But the thing is most of the people that were taking a property subject to, they've screwed up their credit so badly that more than likely they're not going to be able to get another loan anytime in the foreseeable future. So it's really not too much of an issue. So there are circumstances we take a property subject to and they're in a good space. It's just that's the best route for them. But yeah, so hopefully that answers your question. Christine Sotelo says, when picking a foreclosure target, should we avoid HOA and entity tax foreclosures due to redemption times? Overall, most of the time an HOA foreclosure, usually HOA foreclosures don't, I would say they're not as telling of issues. A lot of people just really hate they really just hate their HOA and they're like, I'm not gonna pay it. Sometimes it's just show that they've got some sort of issue, but I would definitely not try to buy a HOA loan or an HOA foreclosure. So
on the guest network.
Hey, I can hear you.
Right now. Hey, so, yeah, I'm back.
I'm gonna leave it as is.
Oh, yeah, please. Okay, thank you. Sounds good. All right. So, hey guys. My gosh. Sorry for your patience. Thank you for your patience. Sorry for the delay. That's what I meant to say. So, Kimberly, thank you so much for being there to assist. Super, super, super appreciate it. Are we? Tell me what question we're on again. I apologize. I think I'm good for right now.
So all I've got left at this point is Louie's question about the Unit A, Unit B. And then the very last question is Marcella's, and hers is all the way down at the bottom. So the very top and the very bottom.
All right. Okay, got it. Okay, so let's see. Let me change it to me. And then let me get my screen up. Awesome. Here we go. Hey, guys. Welcome to the Big Dog Q&A call. You've got Shanoa and Kimberly on today. Kimberly, if you don't mind, just because it's been a little rough with the internet over here, would you just mind kind of hanging around? You don't have to stay on the call, but just in case I need you to step in case I lose internet again. So Louis' question says, I looked at a property that's a Unit A, Unit B situation. The lot is not being replatted, rather a condo-type setup being created. How is the deed of ownership of the land help in this situation? And I think I'm understanding the question. So for us, we do a lot of Unit A, Unit B builds. So we'll take a single family lot and we'll build actually have a condo conversion attorney. So we've got several different condo conversion attorneys that we can recommend. I'm just going to see if I can grab those off of the intro slides really quickly. First off, Alan Seschker has an attorney that will do the two condo regime as an example. Roughly the cost is about $2,500. There are some other folks that have done it for us in the past too. We have David Groom and John Taylor and Julie Alexander. The other thing that you will need to be aware of is that you have to get insurance on those condos, so kind of a special kind of insurance. Let me see if I've got the condo insurance lady that we last used. And what's funny about her is, and I hope I can find it just off a regular search on my phone, and I may not be able to, but I can tell you that once you reach out to any of these attorneys, I'll be able to help you find that person who can get that insurance set up for you. But the last person that we had to use, it was kind of funny. She wouldn't take a payment over the phone, or so she had to have a hard copy check. So that was a little frustrating. But some of these attorneys can help get you through that process, and obviously Alan's office can as well. So that would be my recommendation to get through that aspect. You will be doing surveys as you do the build, but you're not subdividing the lot. If you're doing a lot subdivision, then there might be something else going on here, but it is something that happens all the time here in Austin, specifically East Austin, Central Austin, when it comes to creating these AB units. And Alan's office is very familiar, as are some of the other attorneys that I pasted in as well. So let's see. The buyer reach out. I asked the new buyer for money yesterday and she just kept repeating I didn't have a valid contract. The new buyer still can't sell or can't buy unless you release the memorandum of contract, correct? Since I technically didn't get grandmother to sign the contract, does that mean I don't have a valid contract? So this is tricky. I have to ask the question, but it was the aunt's house, right, Marcella? So if the aunt didn't have any heirs and if the aunt really left the house to Kristen, and if heirship affidavits have already been complete, allowing Kristen to sell, you signed with Kristen, probably before, obviously, those heirship affidavits were done, but I think that's fine. I think you have a perfectly valid contract, assuming that she is the true heir. Now, if it comes back later, Marcella, that she's not the true heir or that other people have to sign, then no, you don't have a valid contract. So let's go back to the new buyer. So I would tell the new buyer, hey, if I didn't have a valid contract, then you probably wouldn't be calling me right now. In a much nicer way than I just said that, but that's effectively, you know, she's calling you because she can't close. So okay, let me go through the rest of the questions. Should I just release a memorandum of contract without pay, even though I worked a lot to get the title clear, marketing to get the lead, etc.? No, I think I think you keep going. In fact, I think you call the title company and tell the title company, hey, I have this property under contract at another title company. Until I get a check from the new buyer, I'm not going to release my interest in the property. So I just want to make that very clear. And if I have to, I'll, you know, might have to start a lawsuit against both the seller and the buyer. So once you start saying those types of words, then the contract, you know, or the closing just comes to a screeching halt, because there's no way, and that's why they're reaching out to you, there's no way that they're going to close on this property with title insurance with that memorandum of contract being hanging out there. So I would start to change your verbiage around that. I would reach out to the title company directly, and I would probably, if you wanted to, you get to be the crazy buyer in this situation, Marcella, which is actually kind of fun. I would tell the other person, hey, you knew I had it under contract, whether they did or they didn't. You knew I had it under contract. This is tortious interference with a business relationship. My attorney says I have grounds for a lawsuit here. And then I would go back to the seller and say, you know, you had an agreement with me. We signed a contract. It is a unilateral option contract. You had no ability to back out of that contract. Just ghosting me and not talking to me does not make my contract any less valid, as evidenced by the fact that the title company is reaching out to me trying to get me to release my agreement with you. Basically, they know that we have an agreement together. So you can either back out with the other buyer and just, you know, do that as best you can, or the other buyer can pay me for, you know, the work that I've done to clear title, the work that I've done to get you through this process and everything else. And by the way, I'm still ready to close before this property goes to auction. So I'd rather you get something instead of nothing, as it's stuck in a lawsuit, because that's where we're currently at. Now, those are very strong words, and I think I'm just a little high strung now because of my internet situation. But you'll have to definitely calm that down, and then you will, you know, start with softly, and then you will start to increase the language, the rhetoric, as you go through the process. So that'd be my recommendation to you, Marcella. I think you gotta, just because they're, you know, telling you, you know, release it, doesn't mean that you have to. But they have to get a release in order to close it with title insurance. And again, you can start it with, hey, I'm willing to work with you here. Here's, you know, three ways that I can work with you. Number one, I can move forward with my contract, which I signed before yours, which makes yours invalid. And I can buy it from the homeowner. And by the way, buyer, if you want to, Marcella, you could say, I'd be willing to give you as much as you're willing to pay me. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander. The other option is to, you know, again, just have them pay you whatever amount it is that you feel like is fair. You know, if you were going to make $50,000 off of this, you know, you're not going to get 50, but you might get 5 to 10. And then I would ask the other person if they wanted to partner or still be part of it. You know, maybe they could bring the funds and you could do the deal, or vice versa. There's some different ways to be creative here, and Marcella, you're sharp as all get out, so I know you'll, you know, kind of think through some of these things and be able to present them in a very nice way. And then again, start to escalate it, and then as it gets closer, just let the title company know that this whole thing, you know, if they close on it, this whole thing's going to get unwound. We're going to end up all in a lawsuit that none of us want to have just because the seller's doing something that they should not be doing. So that'd be my suggestion and advice there. Marcel, I hope that makes sense. And then I think we have all of Christine's questions done. I think about the foreclosure list. Christine, if we didn't answer the question about the foreclosure list, will you please just say, hey, answer the question again about the foreclosure list, just to make sure I got that. Marcella, do you have any questions about what we talked about? Love to clarify anything that maybe is still hanging out there for you. But it looks like I see a question from Christine Lubris. Christine says, a homeowner asked me about her chances of getting a loan for a mobile home if we take her mortgage subject too. I know Alan gave a good explanation as to how we could not harm the homeowner and they could get another loan, but I had a hard time explaining it. Can you go over and refresh me? The thing about getting a loan, and a lot of people get very wrapped around the axle thinking that the home loan is only based on other debt. If you have another house, you're not going to get a loan. A home loan is based on so many different variables. Their credit. So it looks like Kimberly just sent me a message saying that she answered this one. I don't know if she answered Christine Zatella's or Christine Lubris's. I'll continue with Christine. So it's based on what their down payment is. It's based on what their credit score is. It's based on how long they've been in their current job. It's based on lots of other items in addition to just having another mortgage that's out there. My guess is that for a mobile home loan, they're going to be a lot more open about what they accept in terms of, you know, what's on the credit report. So my guess is for the mobile home, that's going to be probably the easiest ones, as long as all of the other stuff is also together, i.e. down payment, i.e. credit score, i.e. all of those other things. Now, if you bought a property because someone was facing foreclosure, then yeah, their credit score is going to be down, and that has nothing to do with you purchasing their property subject to. In fact, you buying their property subject to is the exact thing that would allow them to, at some point in the future, be able to get another loan because you've reinstated the loan, you've stopped the foreclosure, and over time, as you make payments on that loan, it's going to continue to build up their credit score. So I think that's a benefit. Christine says, please clarify the county tax foreclosure redemption period and if I should pursue it. Okay. Yeah, Christine, this is a great one. Let's see here. I'm going to put it on pause and I'm going to take you guys to a website. It's probably one of my favorite websites about land law. Is it Texas? Hold on one second. Let's see here. Well, it's not in my favorites. Lone Star Land Law. Lone Star Land Law. I'm going to go there right now. I'm showing my screen. I'll go ahead and pop in once we get the exact article. So on this page, I've never met this attorney, but he is like, I have an attorney crush on him. I don't know if that's a thing, but he is a very prolific author. And he just put out a new book. So I have his old book, it's not even 2020 yet. He's got the 2020 edition. I have the 2018 edition, so now it looks like I got to up my game and get the 2020. But in here, it talks about foreclosures and specifically tax foreclosures. So I'm just going to click on the foreclosure piece, and I'm going to scroll down to the tax foreclosure. There is a up to 2-year redemption period for properties that are homesteads, as an example. So if they redeem in the first year, they pay you a 25% increase above what you purchased at auction. So for example, if you purchased at $100,000, they would pay you $125,000. Now, if you if they redeem in the second year, they pay you a 50% redemption fee. So again, if you bought it for $100,000, they would pay you $150,000. Now, if you had to put in things to secure, maintain the property, do some minor repairs required by code, ordinance, or a lease in effect at the date of sale, which this is not always the case, but bringing it up to required by code. And this is, there's some interpretation here, and I'm going to go through my suggestions we go through. So this can be returned as well. But if you have a perfectly fine kitchen, but you want to put in my favorite colors, granite and stainless steel, yeah, no, they're not going to give you 150% or 125% or even 100% of the additional money that you put in to make those types of upgrades. Now, if you had to replace the roof because it was leaking inside the house and you keep records for that, yes, they will have to pay you for that. But just be aware that my suggestion to you is that you don't make a lot of repairs, that you put a basic tenant in there and you keep it, keep that basic tenant in there for at least 2 years, and then you go and try and, you know, renovate it and sell it at that time. Now, for properties that are non-homesteaded, there is a 180-day, and actually, so it's a 6-month redemption period, and the redemption premium is only 25%. So if they redeem that property and it was not a homestead in the first 180 days, they can get it back for 25%. Now, to be clear, this section specifically talks about property tax foreclosures. This is not a bank foreclosure, to be clear. Bank foreclosures, no redemption period. So I want to be extra clear about that piece as well. Now, some people think, oh, well, I bought a property at auction, tax foreclosure. It was not a homestead. I held it for 180 days, and now I'm going to go and sell that property. Well, because title companies want to protect themselves and not necessarily, I mean, and you too, right? They will not issue, most title companies will not issue title insurance even though it was a non-homesteaded property, just because they're afraid that someone's going to come back later on and say, well, wait a second, you know, I was actually living there from this time to this time and it was my homestead. So then title companies don't want to have to unwind these transactions, pay title insurance, et cetera. So just because you think it was not homesteaded doesn't mean a title company is going to give you title insurance. They will give you title insurance after you've held it for that 2-year period. There's a whole separate thing about HOA redemptions as well. If you're thinking about buying an HOA foreclosure, I don't necessarily recommend it, just because usually you're taking all the other liens subject to those liens, and you don't know what the payoffs on those may be as well. Also be aware of the long practice of in Texas to liberally construe redemption statutes in favor of redemption, meaning they want to give it back to the prior owner. The burden is carried when the homeowner demonstrates substantial compliance with the statute. Prudent investors should be prepared to hold the property and avoid either making substantial improvements to it or reselling it until after any applicable rights of redemption have expired, even though redemption is statistically unlikely. So there's a ton about foreclosure in here. There's just a lot of greats. I mean, just this guy, you can see why I have an attorney crush on him. Even though I've never met him, he's just a prolific writer, and he writes about all these different topics, and just really good stuff. So I'm impressed by this guy. I'm gonna send him like a fruitcake or something. All right, so Christine, I think that answers yours. Marcella, back to your question. Marcella says, so even though I didn't get to finish the affidavit of heirship and truly find it out who gets the house, I can still say I have a valid contract. Ah, okay, so I didn't get this part. You said technically grandma inherits the house, not the niece. The niece is just getting money since the grandma is going along with the aunt's wishes. Ah, so you didn't, so Marcel, I want to just look at one. I'm just going to go back to this thing here. You met with Kristen twice. Okay, the mom is just, okay. So I guess my question is, and you may have already answered this, I'm looking right now, who did you sign the contract with? It looks like you signed it with Kristen, not the grandma. I think that's right, yeah. So it says, I technically didn't get grandma to sign the contract. Does that mean, okay, interesting. Yeah. Marcella. Yeah, so if you don't mind, I'm gonna throw this Alan's way. It is true. I don't think you have a valid contract because you only got Kristen to sign. And the way that Airship works in Texas is it goes down. So it goes, you know, the woman who owned it, it goes to her children. And if she does not have children, then it goes up, meaning to her parents. And if her parents are deceased, then it goes, I believe, don't quote me on all this, then it goes out to the brothers and sisters. And then it goes, who knows where the heck it goes from there. The brothers and sisters' kids, right? So I think that's how that works. So I am curious. And I don't know how they've set up this closing. So have they set up the closing that they're doing as grandmother signed the contracts and grandmother got the Airship affidavits and grandmother is signing the general warranty deed over to the new buyer? That, and I don't know that they'll tell you that. Because if it's grandma, then yeah, I don't think you necessarily have a valid contract. But if it's Kristen, then yeah, I think you have a valid contract there. And again, they could have skipped past some of the, I can't answer that. So I'm gonna have to say, bring Alan in, regrettably. And I hate not being able to answer y'all's questions, but I don't wanna give you, you know, what's worse than bad advice from a trusted source. So I don't want that to be me. So this is where I get to say I'm not an attorney, CPA, or financial planner, even though sometimes I feel like I play one on these calls for you guys. So I would reach out to Alan to get the final on this. Let me tell you this though, Marcella, the fact that they are calling you is indicative of the fact that, you know, they know they have something to clear. So, and I think that even though you didn't get it signed with, you know, on a technicality with the grandma, so, and this is a lesson learned for you next time, get both to sign. I think that because you didn't, even though you didn't get it technically signed with her, you still should be able to, you know, work something out on this and get paid for some of the effort that you put in. What would be a fair number? Maybe somewhere between, you know, $1,000 and $5,000. So normally I'd say a release of memorandum is worth $5,000 to $10,000. But in this case, because of that major point, it's worth less. I think it's still worth something though. And I would push for it. And I would just say, since, you know, it's like, hey, I want to be fair with you guys. But you also have to be fair with me, because in truth, if you and Kristen would have stayed in contact and you would have finished this process, you would have just changed who the seller is from Kristen to the grandma. And you would have gone on your merry way. But the what happened is you had either a rogue investor who came in after you knowing you had it under contract, or you had a rogue seller who basically said, oh, I'm going to use this as an opportunity. And they don't even know. And I'm curious to know, Marcella, does the other investor know that you have the wrong seller there? Have they brought that up? Can you give me a yes or no on that? I'm waiting patiently, and I'm super curious about this. Okay, so yes, the other investor is aware of that fact. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I, you know, so this would, this is where it goes to Alan. Because I feel like you can still, you still have, you know, you don't have a, you know, you have a pinky toe to stand on, just because the intention was there. But you don't have a full leg to stand on. So again, let's bring that to Alan, because he's going to tell you, he's going to lay down the law. So I'm done playing attorney. I don't want to give you bad trusted advice. So reach out to Alan. Reach out to him today. And now Misha is the airship expert, but Misha's not the lawyer. And you want kind of the combination of the airship expert plus the lawyer side. So that, and I think we already figured out the airship expert piece, which is, yeah, you signed someone with somebody who didn't own it. But from the legal side, because of the intention and because of the kind of agreements and everything else, whether verbal or written, I think you have, like I said, a pinky toe to stand on. I wouldn't give up just yet. You bet, Marcella. Guys, what other questions do you have for me today on this call? And thank you again so much for your patience. Thank you guys again for your patience. I really do appreciate it. So what else can I answer for you? All right, guys, what else? I know you have other questions. I know you have other questions. Let's see who's on the call today. Glennis, oh my gosh, feel like I haven't seen you in a while. Isella's on. Julie Allen, it's so cool to see you guys on the call, even though I don't always see you guys in real life. Ah, so this reminds me, guys, I feel like such a dope. I should have announced this long ago, if any of you guys are homeless for Thanksgiving, and if any of you guys would like to join Phil and our family for Thanksgiving, last year we opened up the house to big dogs who didn't have a place to go. Love to do it again this year. So if you guys don't have a place to go for Thanksgiving, love to have you guys join us over at our house. Just send me a text, call me, email me, whatever. I'll give you directions, and love to have you guys. And don't want you to spend Thanksgiving alone or anything like that. Now, to be clear, that doesn't mean we can handle you and your six children. This is really for big dogs who don't have a place to go. So I kind of jokingly say homeless big dogs, although none of our big dogs are homeless, but the ones who don't have any family here in Texas and are not traveling. So we'd love, 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 love to host you and have you over. Glenn says, I have eight kids. My eight and I will be there. Ha ha, cute, cute, cute. You're welcome to come, honestly, but I think we might run out of food at some point, but that's okay, because it would be nice not to have so much food left over at the house afterwards. We're going to put out, last year we put out an email, what we're going to do this year is, I think Phil's going to, so I got, Kimberly just sent me a text too. What we're going to do this year is, we're just going to put a post on the Big Dog Facebook page. I think that might be easier and faster. So Tasha says she can bring a Cajun dish. So you guys, I mean, you guys can bring whatever you want, but I think we'll probably have enough food, and I reserve the right to change my mind on that. But you heard me say this, Tasha, in Houston Tuesday night when I made the announcement for this. There will be some dishwashing in your future for any Big Dogs that show up there. Because normally that's the day that all I do all day is stand and do dishes, which is, I think, good to get my standing numbers up. But so that's the only thing I'll ask. Just help us with the dishes. So there you go, guys. If you'd like to join us, you're more than welcome to shoot me a text or an email. Julie says, and this is the last question, so if I don't see any more questions, guys, I'm going to go ahead and call the call after this one. Julie asks, personal guarantee or other secured by on a note, what does that mean? Okay. So whenever you get a loan from Wells Fargo, as an example, most of the time you're getting a loan that's in your personal name, so that you're personally tied to that loan. So that is a personal guarantee. Now, when you get a loan in your LLC, the whole idea of having an LLC is to protect you from people above you and people below you, meaning the bank and, for example, tenants or, you know, anybody who's at your property that might get hurt, as an example. So the bank is going to ask you, you know, might give you a loan in your LLC, but will usually ask you to sign some type of a personal guarantee in addition. So the LLC provides you that ground cover to not get sued, you know, in the LLC, or sued personally. But if you are doing a loan in LLC, usually Bank of America, Wells Fargo, et cetera, will ask you to be personally liable as well, which means not only can they foreclose on you and take the property back, but they can come back and later sue you. If you know something, and that's a rare occurrence, but sometimes that happens if someone's doing something untoward, illegal, criminal, etc. So, and then Julie, if you are asking from the standpoint of you want to give a loan to someone else, and you want that, and that someone else, you know, wants to get a loan in their LLC, it's not uncommon to get both a personal guarantee and a form that's called a non-homestead affidavit or a business purpose affidavit, which basically says, I'm not going to move into this house. This is a business transaction. That way they can't later on go and declare bankruptcy in the event that they move into the house and want that type of protection. So, Julie, and I don't know the exact context here, but if you are giving a loan to someone else, yeah, always ask for a personal guarantee. Why the heck not? So you as the lender, yeah, get that personal guarantee and get that business purpose affidavit, non-homestead affidavit. Alan makes all that stuff for you. Please, and help me help you, and help me not have to unwind stuff that other attorneys don't do or don't know to do, meaning some attorneys won't ask for a personal guarantee. Hold on, Nugget! Please don't let Nugget out. Thank you. Oh my gosh. Got like 10 people working on the house right now. So sorry about that. So please close with Alan, please, because that just, you know, he knows what to do. And, you know, ask him for it still. I mean, you know, just like when you go into surgery with an MD who's been in school for 10 years, you wouldn't think that he has to mark an X on the leg that he's operating on, but that's what they do. So still, even though you're closing with Alan, please mark an X on the leg that they're operating on, i.e. ask them, you know, hey Alan, just want to make sure you're setting up a personal guarantee here and business purpose affidavit to make sure that I'm safe. So yes, that's exactly how you do it. Okay, Christine says, clarification, the websites that are being written today will be converted over to the new format after the first of the year. Chris, so I wish I could give you an exact time frame. I'm not going to bite on that. No way. I know they are working very, very, very hard to have it as quickly as possible, but I can't guarantee when that's going to be. And I don't want to write that check and not be able to cash it later. So, but here's what I can promise you: as soon as it's out and ready to rock, you're going to get it. So that's my commitment to you. Well, guys, I see nothing else. I'll just hold on the call for about another minute or so, just in case. And man, thank you guys for being big dogs. Thank you for being so helpful in the ways that you serve other big dogs, adhering to our code of conduct and our ethics. Making other big dogs' dreams happen by partnering with them, being of service to them, and just being very open. That means a lot to both me and Phil and the culture that we have worked hard to set up and enforce. And appreciate you guys being part of my team, my extended family, and look forward to seeing you guys in Austin tonight at our Austin meeting, and next Tuesday in Dallas, and then of course Thanksgiving. I hope you guys enjoy it with you and all of yours. And to be clear, as much as we love to be of service to you, we will not be of service to you on Thanksgiving Day. I'm officially taking the day off. So you can still send a message into Deals at Love American Homes or Princes at Love American Homes, but that day is a day that I will not be doing this call. So just want to give you guys a heads up about that. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody on the call. I'll talk to you all later. Have a wonderful day. Take care. Bye-bye.